Tom, how are you?
I'm good this morning, Tony. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. You had a great line yesterday in our email conversation. I had heard that you were in China, and you told me not yet that you were still in pure Michigan.
Yeah, I'm still in pure Michigan. It's absolutely a great place to be in spite of all our challenges.
All right. Well, before we start talking about the menagerie of topics that I have for you, tell us a little bit about your background and what you spend your time doing now.
Well, I have some people like to say they have a career ladder. Mine's been more of a career rock climb. I've worked in juvenile justice and politics, both elected and served as Governor Blanchard's deputy campaign manager when he first ran for office. Worked at a CPA firm, Blant Moran, helped start the first chartered school here in Michigan, the forerunner to the first chartered school, as well as the first chartered school in the state of Florida. Have been a therapist and state mental health director and deputy chief of staff for Governor Blanchard. Went on to become the state superintendent of schools here in Michigan, and spent about 6 years in Palm Beach County, Florida, running an organization similar to the old Detroit Renaissance or Michigan Business Leaders called the Economic Council of Palm Beach County, the top 150 business leaders in Palm Beach, focusing on making it a great place to live, work, play, and raise a family. The last 5 years, I've been spending a lot of my time building economic and cultural educational bridges between Michigan, in particular, United States, and China. I see this as an opportunity to make sure that China's rise doesn't come at Michigan's demise, and finding ways to make sure that we can use that economic stimulus in China, put our people back to work as well.
Well, the last time we talked, our conversation focused on education. And here's what I learned. We've had quite a few conversations about education on this program. But what seems to be the underlying theme and perhaps the foundation for how we should deal with education is that education should be a competitive type situation. We're all on the same team. It's not public schools versus private schools versus charter schools. We need to make funding for education a top priority. And because we're kind of under the eight ball, many other countries in developed industrialized countries identify the best and the brightest and then educate them or put them in industrial or sports programs. We don't do that here. So we need to do everything that we can as a collective partnership to educate our kids. Am I on the right track there?
Well, you certainly are. A couple things that I would add is that it's not just putting more money into the same old, same old. If we do that, we're not going to get where we need to go. So it's targeting those resources and making sure they're getting to the places which are going to really add value and make a difference and make our children competitive on the world stage. And the other thing that I would add, Tony, is that we spend too much time internally pointing the finger at labor unions or administrators or school boards or superintendents, and externally, you know, pointing that this country does this or this country does that. And my response is get over it. The world's changed in dramatic ways, and it's our responsibility as adults and certainly as policymakers to find ways to prepare our kids for the world in which they're going to inherit.
You know, we are known as innovators with this country, and I find it interesting how most of the world's industrialized countries send their children to school more days, more hours. I can remember a time where we used to go to school from just after the Labor Day weekend to Memorial Day and that weekend. And there seems to be somewhat of an uproar about sending our kids to school more often and for more hours. And, Tom, is that centrally focused because it will cost more?
Well, you know, that's one way to look at it. And we tend to think sometimes just because we add more, we have to pay more. And quite honestly, I think that's a fallacy in the state. And as difficult as this may be, I think we may need to ask our educators to work longer for the same pay. And in fact, Tony, I mean, this is a difficult one for people to ask, but I mean, I think most of us that are out there have been working longer for the same or less money for the last few years. The other challenge, and I've said this goes back probably a decade and a half now, and I was talking to the former president of the MEA, and I asked her at the time, are the majority of the teachers now, do they work a longer day and a longer year that their contract calls for? And she said, absolutely. And I said, well, a lot of the MEA came back and said they were going to, you know, have a longer school day and a longer school year, and that was just going to be part of their contract. And I think she's absolutely right. Most great teachers get there early in the morning. They're grading papers at home and the like. So it wouldn't change. It probably legitimize a lot of the work that they're already doing.
Well, what I find the challenge is when I hear union officials talk about this, because we are personal friends, close friends with two different teachers, two different grades, and I don't hear these people complaining. They're constantly grading papers. They're constantly working before and after school, as you mentioned. But it always seems like it's the upper echelon of union officials who are doing the complaining.
Well, part of that is that's our role. I mean, we have some.
I'm sorry about that. We lost your connection. Are you okay?
I'm absolutely great. What I was saying, Tony, is that we have some exceptional teachers out there. I wrote this book. It was titled "They Help Us Paint Rainbows." And when I would go out into the schools across the great state of Michigan, as state superintendent, I would go into the classroom and ask the children, from kindergarten up to high school, do they have great teachers? And they would talk and tell me these things that were just so beautiful. And one little kindergarten girl that I read to, when after I was finished, I asked her if she had a great teacher, and she looked at me with those cute, puffy little kindergarten cheeks and says, "Oh, we have great teachers." And I said, "What makes them great, honey?" She says, "They help us paint rainbows." And our great teachers are doing that. They're lifting up our children. They're creating our future each and every day, and we need to find ways to support them. Having said that, we cannot continue to operate public education like we have historically. It's really going to need to change in order to keep up with, you know, 4 billion new capitalists that have, you know, entered the world competitive stage. And I'm talking about countries like Brazil, Russia, India, and China, that weren't on the competitive stage when I was growing up. And now, when ideas and work can move around the world effortlessly, we just cannot continue to do the same thing in the same way and expect that we're going to be the great country as the 21st century unfolds.
Tom, my next question revolves around competition in China. My 9-year-old son loves basketball, and he wants to be a better player, and I kind of realized that I'm going to have to get him outside of Williamson if I want him to be good. And actually, it's not if I want, it's what he wants. And I knew I had to get him in some competition with Lansing kids, because it's a different game, it's a bigger game. It seems like from the conversations that I've had with you, we need to do whatever we need, whatever we can, to be able to compete with China. For example, on the stage that our gubernatorial candidates are sharing, China seems to be a big issue, and you have two different candidates going at it from two different ways. What's your take on the issue that China is taking away Michigan jobs?
Well, look, we need to do everything we can to protect jobs in this country, and I think both candidates are talking about free and fair trade. But that's a bit above both of their grade levels. I mean, that's really going to be presidential issues and congressional issues to deal with the trade agreements that are there. I'm an old boxer and a football coach, and you know, if I was complaining about the other team cheating, my coach would give me a good whack in the back of the head and say, "Get in there and find a way to win." And that's what Michigan needs to be about. The world has changed. The fact is that if it wasn't for China, General Motors, the biggest employer there in Lansing, would be in deeper doo-doo than they have been. It's selling cars. If it wasn't for the profits that General Motors is bringing home from China, they would have been in greater problems than they have been. So to sit here and make China, the boogeyman of the 21st century elections, you know, may make good local politics, but it really isn't helping us. It isn't helping create one job here in the state. Now, having said that, China is in fact investing in Michigan. China auto company Geely purchased Volvo from Ford Motor Company, saving hundreds if not thousands of jobs across the state and the country. While they don't make the cars here, they sell them here, and there's salespeople and engineers and designers and like that they work here. A Chinese car company just bought a parts maker, the old Saginaw Steering Gearing, next year up in Saginaw, saving 4,000 jobs. And China, because they have the cash and the investment and the need, are doing things right here, right now in the state to create jobs. So we shouldn't have a short-sighted making China the boogeyman. We should be opening our doors and making Michigan a magnet for Chinese and investment from around the world.